This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Shouldn't you be at work?
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I'll have a low-fat pizza or something like that, or a few biscuits and some milk on a Sunday.
And you can pair up if you like, and you can fucking pick someone else to help you, and you can bring your fucking dinner.
Bannister and Bruce in the queue again. Bruce!
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Tony Hatton!
No!
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? Series 7, Episode 1. We are back. I'm Chris Gold. Joining me, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
Oh, fuck, I haven't written an intro for Michael. What should I say?
That's fine, that'll do. No, that's fine. I like that. Let's go.
Just get it down.
What a start to the series.
Is that kind of ring rust that you need to work through? That kind of rustiness, isn't it? Like pre-season.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what?
It's that first ball back. I've played it into you. You've just pinged off.
Yeah, yeah, like, I've got to get my touch back. This is why we're having pre-season, guys.
You've been running without the ball, haven't you? You've mainly been doing cross-country runs. Welcome back. It's been a pleasure to return. We've already recorded 8 of the episodes of the series, and there's some absolute corkers. Now, let's get down to brass tacks, shall we? This week, we have a huge announcement.
It's massive.
Michael, could we have some kind of classic fanfare? Yes, we're excited to announce... I'm genuinely very excited. We are very excited to announce the Quickly Kevin Fan Club. Only on Patreon. Yes, we're not going to lie. We heard of the Lee Sharp Fan Club and we just replaced the names. It's that simple. Now, the continuation of Quickly Kevin Series 7 as normal in all your normal podcast places will carry on as usual. But if you want a huge treasure trove of exclusive and extra Quickly Kevin content, so much. Imagine the trophies Man U would have had if they hadn't had Peter Schmeichel in goal throughout the 90s. That amount of treasure. Hello, Michael. You still there? Hello, yeah. Michael. Chris, what have we got in store on the Quickly Kevin Fan Club?
Here's what you can receive on the Quickly Kevin Fan Club. Ad-free episodes, exclusive behind-the-scenes and extra audio-visual content, Fan Club-only extended episodes with bonus content, early episode release. Fan Club members will get the main series episodes on Saturday afternoon instead of Monday morning. You'll also receive 4 pieces of Quickly Kevin merchandise a year, free tickets to our live Zoom shows, the chance to have your name in the opening titles of the show, early access to live physical show tickets, a free cup of chamomile tea on us, and if all that wasn't enough, each month we will be releasing not one, but 2 extra episodes only for Quickly Kevin Fan Club members. The first one themed episode a month. First up is the return of the Quickly Kevin Film Club, where we review the Robert Duvall and Ally McCoy Scottish football film, A Shot at Glory at Long Last. And finally, the big one, the grand reveal. Each month we are going to do a chapter by chapter reappraisal of the Steve Barnes trilogy in full with Ivo Graham and the team picking it apart as they go. Yes, you heard us. We are going to pore over every single page of the trilogy of books exclusively for Quickly Kevin fan club members. And all of this is available now over on patreon.com/quicklykevin.
Do you know what, Jim? I'm just going to take the money I've won and I'm going to go home happy with the 200 quid. I genuinely, we spent ages kind of coming up with everything that we'd want in a Quickly Kevin fan club. And once Michael wasn't up for the nude calendar, this is what we came for. But I'm so excited. There's so many good things here. So you get your 4 free pieces of merchandise. I'm not going to give it the big QVC, so you know. But I will say, Chris, what is your thing you are looking forward to the most?
I've got something up my sleeve there. So what we're going to do is take it in turns for the one monthly special. So you're going to get the Steve Barnes every month. But the extra special, there's something good coming up for Halloween, I think, potentially. We'll have to wait and see. But we've done chapter one of the Steve Bruce first book, Striker. That is absolute gold and plenty more where that came from.
I think what we basically say is, we've given you a clip of that in this episode so you can see how it is. But what we've really done is we've slightly appropriated a format that worked very well for a certain podcast of just reading the book out in full and talking as we go. And to be honest, we regretted not doing it first time around. So it's lovely to have this second bite at the cherry. Michael, what are you most excited about?
I'm really looking forward to that cup of chamomile tea.
If you want to read more about it or sign up without reading more about it, then go to patreon.com. That's P for Palmer, A for Andy Sinton,
wow,
T for Tony Daly, R for Reggie Blinker, E for Edgy Blinker, O for Oyvind Leonardson, and N for Naeem. .com/quicklykevin.
I thought you were going to start spelling the C on com and then go to it. Wow.
So it's patreon.com/quicklykevin.
And Josh's idea, which I was like, what on earth is this? But if you join our Patreon, you will get a monthly email from Lee Sharp, brackets, it may be one of us impersonating Lee Sharp, updating you.
It'll be Lee Sharp's diary for the month, a little update from his life in the 90s, that as well. Also, we will be sending out a mailing list about it, so join the mailing list if you want to. As a taster for it, you will be getting a slice of the first episode of the Steve Barnes trilogy, chapter one of Striker, a slice coming up later in this episode. But before that, it's an old faithful. It's the electronic post bag.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
So, this is from Tim Manns. Hello, since you talked about the Dell, I thought I'd drop you a line. I've been a Saints fan for so long, it makes my blood run cold to quantify the number of years. It's enough to say I went to the Dell hundreds of times. What I'm about to tell you is a true story from late 1978. The Saints were playing Norwich, and at halftime, they put on an RAF dog display on the pitch. It was the usual thing, Alsatian dogs scaling impossibly high walls, jumping through hoops of fire, etc. The grand finale was a man with a briefcase and a villain with lots of padding around his arms carrying a gun. He fired a couple of blanks, stole the briefcase, and set off down the pitch, hotly pursued by the dog. At this point, one of the policemen on the side of the pitch, who clearly hadn't been paying much attention, turned around and, through a process of logic that baffles me to this day, decided that what was happening was real and ran onto the pitch to apprehend Chummy. You couldn't question his bravery, but his judgment left a lot to be desired. The man on the mic appealed for him to leave the pitch because this was simply a demonstration, at which point the penny dropped. He walked rather sheepishly back at first, but the cheers of the crowd soon roused him, and in the end he was waving like a triumphant Roman general. Afterwards, I saw another copper who had been inside the ground telling another one outside on traffic duty what had happened. The latter had to sit down on the wall outside the Winston pub and wipe away tears of laughter.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Older fans still remember the story, and I know I will too long after I've forgotten my own name. That is from Tim Manns. That is an astonishing story.
Wow.
Imagine the police thinking The armed criminal had stolen a briefcase on the pitch.
God, how would you feel at that moment? You're like, oh no. Oh no. It's the sort of thing you'd be embarrassed if you did at home and no one was watching. In a stadium full of people. Do you think he was like pitch side that whole time, but had just kind of wandered in his own? He was sort of daydreaming about, I've got to pick up milk and eggs. And then it's like, fuck me, there's a robbery. Or do you think he had come out from like the tunnel, and then he had only just caught this man sort of running and didn't have the whole picture?
Stolen that man's briefcase.
And also, why is he dressed like the Michelin man?
Okay, we've discussed Jaime Moreno before, haven't we? He used to play for Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
It was my 14th birthday, and myself and my mates were taken to Teesside Park to go tenpin bowling. Upon arrival, one of my friends, a Big Brother fan, spotted Moreno sat sipping a Pepsi with his brother. My mother approached Jaime and asked if he minded having his photo, and he duly obliged. So I'm going to send you the photo, and I want you to see if you can spot the funny detail of the photo. It's absolutely superb. So there's the photo of Jaime Moreno with these fans. Can you see what the problem is? He's sporting the Coca-Cola jacket that I believe he would have worn won for being man of the match a few days earlier.
He's wearing a man of the match jacket.
Imagine getting a jacket for being man of the match.
And then wearing it out. And it's got a big Coca-Cola embroidered badge on it too. Also, the jacket itself, aside from the embroidery, is the same kind of make as... The only way I can describe it is the ones bin men used to wear in the 90s. Like Duff or like Trigger in Only Fools would wear this.
Imagine going out and going, I'm going to get to put the man of the match jacket on.
What shall I wear?
What shall I wear? I'll wear my man of the match jacket. Now... Something serious. Can we have Ness and Dorma, please, as I take you back to 1990? Hello, guys. The other day, I got to an episode of your most recent quiz. In there was a section where a fellow listener brings to light the fact that Terry Venables chose not to make a substitution on the Euro 96 semi-final. A huge revelation. Josh and Chris understandably appeal for anyone sitting on any more historical revisionism. At the beginning of the lockdown, I decided to watch the entire semi-final from Italia 90. I don't know if anyone else was aware of this or if this was common knowledge, but it is rarely shown in small highlights of the match. Apart from the goals that are frequently shown, I was followed. Gazza's yellow, Waddle's shot from 45 yards that's tipped over the bar, Waddle's volley from the edge of the area, and Waddle hitting the post in the first half of extra time. What is rarely shown is that David Platt had a perfectly good goal ruled out for offside in the second half of injury time.
What?
I genuinely just got goosebumps as I read that out.
I don't even remember that.
No, really? I don't remember that at all. There's nothing wrong with it. The Germans pushed up as Waddle sent in his free kick, but the defender on the far side was slow and definitely played everyone onside. Strikes me very weird, as we're all familiar with the various England heartbreaks from the 90s, from Gazza's booking, to him sliding in 96, Anderson hitting the post in the same game, Beckham's red card, Campbell's disallowed goal. I could go on. Before I'd recently seen this, I thought we'd lost this brilliantly fought semi-final fair and square. I was never aware of the injustice of this decision.
That's unbelievable. How
he sent a link
that?
To the video, which obviously we can watch in our own time and cry. But isn't that unbelievable?
You'd think that'd be burned into public consciousness.
Shall I just play you the video share screen?
I really can't wrap my head around that. Surely, I've watched the highlights countless times. I've seen documentaries about it. No one ever talks about that.
But bloody that night in... What's that documentary where Gary Oldman does the kind of...
One Night in Turin.
One Night in Turin. One Night in Heaven. And by M People doesn't mention it either.
Actually, weirdly, that song does mention it.
Share your screen.
It's a free kick to England. A yellow card for the German left back. Waddle's delivery. The whistle had gone. It's not going to count. David Platt thought for a moment he had scored. But the flag raised for offside. Oh, there's not much in that. Looks like the defender on the far side is playing him on.
It's difficult to tell, isn't it? It's difficult to tell.
Well, also because none of them contest it.
I think he is onside.
Go back. I was looking at the first man there.
I feel like we're watching the Zapruder tapes.
But this is more important.
Pause.
Oh God.
I can't believe this isn't more famous.
Oh, I think he's. I think the
he's
guy.
He's well the guy on. At the back. The guy at the back's playing him on, Michael.
That's the ref. Isn't
that's
it?
The ref.
But that's
no. This guy in the green.
This guy. Can you see my cursor?
Yeah, but
he's
if you look
on
at the
there.
Guy,
look at the pitch. Look at the lines in the pitch.
No, but it's not just Platt. In 1990, this guy in front of Platt.
No, but he's playing everyone on. Look
I
at the
don't
lines.
Know.
Look at the line of the grass.
Look. Well, all I'm going to say is that's less contentious than I was expecting it to be.
That's absolutely... Mate...
That's the moment the ball's hit. Look, that's a German player there. That's a German leg. Look.
Oh, Michael.
Michael.
I mean, look, I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying it's
We've
not.
We've just won the World Cup in 1990.
Well,
why
you know,
are we all freaking out?
Maybe it's karma for the Russian linesman in 66.
That is absolutely astonishing. That is unreal. I never knew that.
Absolutely. There we'll put go. That on our Instagram and on our Twitter.
I would honestly say that's the most astonishing revelation this podcast has ever unearthed.
It's up there,
no,
isn't it?
Yeah. No,
do you think
no,
that's
no,
more...
No. The golden goal, if they'd have won, they'd all run off the pitch. I'd say
oh,
that's
yeah,
the
suppose,
most astonishing
yeah.
revelation.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'll give you that.
Okay, here's another email. This is from Stephen McKenzie. Good day, chaps. Josh accidentally calling Bobby Charlton and Bobby Como recently.
Oh, there's a merch idea, Bobby Como.
Yeah, Bobby Como. A story about the other Sir Bob. Not Bob Geldof, Bobby Robson. Bobby Robson was signing copies of his autobiography at the now defunct Robs of Hexham department store, not far from Newcastle. Obviously, Bobby's an absolute legend in these parts, so people queuing out the door to meet the great man. A friend took his son along, and after hours of waiting, finally got to the front of the queue. As Bobby signed his book, the young lad said, "I bet you've signed plenty of these books today, Bobby." So Bob replied, "Oh, hundreds, son, hundreds." As they left the store, the excited young lad opened up his book to find Bobby's message. "All the best, Bobby Hundreds."
That's a great email. That is a great email. So that's lost all its resale value straight away.
I don't know. I think that's worth a lot now.
Bobby Hundreds. Remarkable.
Now, Michael, I'm going to give this to you. You can choose. Would you like Scotland squad numbers at Euro 92 or Schmeichel being chipped?
Oh, let's Schmeichel being... We'll start with Schmeichel being chipped.
You want Schmeichel being chipped?
Yeah, we'll start with that.
It begins with just the words, "More fuel to the fire."
Fuck off. I'm so sick of defending this on social media.
Look at... Watch Michael's Twitter these days is 90% him having to defend Peter Schmeichel.
Let us not forget that Schmeichel was also chipped in the final 10 minutes of the Champions League final by Mehmet Scholl and only saved by the post.
Oh, of course!
Well, it's got to go in. That doesn't count. Otherwise, any shot that goes over the bar counts. I'm dismissing that straight away.
He's lumping them all in.
His inadequacies almost ruined the Red Devil's finest moment. Proof he was rubbish.
That is one of the most famous lobs. We've never talked about that.
I also remember a former player, I think it might have been Beckham, saying that during shooting practice, if anyone tried to chip Peter, he would angrily grab the ball and kick it as far away as he could. Further proof of his unwillingness to deal with his shortcomings.
That I can believe.
Kind regards, Peter Halstead.
Do you think, when I think about United's great goals in the 90s, like Cantona, they're chips, aren't they? Is that because they were just, it was an easy way to score in training. So they all became so good at them. Beckham from like 30 yards and...
That Cantona one about Crystal Palace?
Yeah,
Beckham against Wimbledon.
Beckham against Wimbledon.
You think they're so used to trying to chip Schmeichel that inadvertently they've become really, really good at a thing. Like this weird muscle memory.
Is Schmeichel's weakness actually United's strength because it got their strikers to be so attuned at chipping and long-range goals that it propelled them to Premier League supremacy? We've just cracked the code.
I'd read that Athletic article, I'm not going to lie.
You're one a month. Would you like a Do I Remember This Right about Euro 96, Michael?
Yes, please.
Do I remember this right?
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 Do I remember this right? Right. Hi, team. A lot of people started listening during lockdown, so thank you for that. This is Henry Smith is one of them. Anyway, I've been listening out for my favourite 90s rumour, and unless I missed it, it has not emerged. It is as follows. In the England-Scotland game in Euro 96, I have it on good authority that Gazza forgot his boots for the game and ended up wearing Teddy Sheringham's spare boots, which were size too big, thereby making his achievements in the game even more remarkable.
What?
If I could put this to your listenership, stroke Dario G, stroke Steve Ball, stroke anyone else you can think of, I'd love to get it confirmed.
I mean, that's interesting. I don't want to be a spoiler sport, but like, one size up is not that big a deal. I will regularly wear a size 11 instead of a 10 if they've only got that in stock.
Yeah, but you're not chipping it over Colin Hendry, Michael. You're walking to the shops.
Well, maybe that's what allowed him to ship it over Colin Hendry.
Yeah. Because if you're chipping, and I'm sure Peter Schmeichel's aware of this, but if you're chipping, then the lack of toe in the end of the boot is going to allow you to chip it easier.
Get under it.
Yeah, get under it. So really, if you are a fan of the chip, if you're lining up against Manchester United, you should be wearing boots that are four or five sizes too big.
You need to look like Ronald McDonald on that Wembley turf.
Yeah, so Chris Bart Williams is wearing a size 8.
It's essentially like you turn the football boot into like a sand wedge.
Yeah,
he's golfing terminology.
Yeah, it's the real open face on the toe.
Some great correspondence. There's more to come. Sorry I didn't get to do Scotland squad numbers at Euro 92, but suffice to say, one day Michael will be very disappointed to hear how that one turns out. But we're going to have to stop the correspondence because, Chris, you've got a new feature.
Well, I've just been throughout lockdown looking at Twitter, looking at the news, and it really struck me that there seem to be more stories about 90s footballers, contemporary stories, than ever before. Enough stories to warrant their own news programme to keep everybody abreast of what's happening in the world of 90s football as it continues to evolve. And that's why I've come up with the 90s O'Clock News. Steve Chettle has beef with Quickly Kevin. Jack Charlton's curious picks on a replay of his Desert Island Discs. Okay.
I'm looking forward to those headlines.
I've got two news stories for you.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about Steve Chettle having beef with Quickly Kevin.
So, we recently announced on our Twitter that we were coming back and that we were launching today, the 5th of October. This is when Series 7 was about to start. And when we did, we sat around the table and said, right, to accompany this tweet, we need to hashtag a random 90s footballer, random enough that it'll make us laugh. We sat around over a beer, spitballed a few ideas. We came up with Steve Chettle. So we fired off the tweet, Quickly Kevin's coming back 5th of October, hashtag Steve Chettle. A few days pass, and then suddenly someone slides into our DMs. It's Steve Chettle. He quotes the tweet and says, what's all this about, lads? And so suddenly,
scary.
We're in the position of, and Matt Ford has talked about what a scary guy Steve Chettle is. I think he didn't shout at him from the terraces once, yeah. Like, and Steve Chettle kind of told him to throw the balls back or something like that. So how do you handle this situation? We just said, Steve, just trying to think of a random 90s footballer, you know, that fans of 90s football would appreciate. And we came up with you, didn't realise you'd find the tweet, but we're big fans of yours. Love to have you on the show one day. And Steve Chettle replied, I'm here whenever you need me. Thumbs up. To which Michael, you said, who does he think he is, Batman? Like, I'm here if you need me. We should put the Chettle signal up to the sky.
The other thing I liked about that is we didn't at Steve Chettle in that tweet.
No.
We put hashtag Steve Chettle. So I'm going to presume Steve Chettle searches his own name on Twitter.
Checks the hashtag every day, which must be very...
few and far between. And what if this is the magic code to reach out to any 90s footballer we want? You just hashtag them.
Oh, yeah.
And they come crawling.
I bet that would be a good booking policy.
Yeah. It would. I would indulge in this, but I'm too busy worrying about what Jack Charlton picked on Desert Island Discs.
I was on a drive recently. I was scouting for content for this new 90s O'Clock News feature we've got. And Desert Island Discs recently replayed Jack Charlton's 1996 appearance on Desert Island Discs. And some of the choices are just absolutely spectacular. I think it's his first choice, Jack Charlton's first choice to spend eternity on a desert island. His first record, Crocodile Shoes, Jimmy Nail. I was racing along the M6. I nearly had to pull over. And he's just a big fan of Jimmy Nail.
Who isn't?
And also, like, I lined up the dates. He's gone on to Desert Island Discs. I think the song's been out about 3 months at this point. And he's decided it's one of the best songs he's ever heard. So much so he wants to spend the rest of his life on a desert island with it.
That's like when at the end of the millennium they do a lot of like best 100 number ones. And you get the ones that are like just from last year and everyone's voted for them. Jack Charlton's that guy that goes, music's getting better, Crocodile Shoes is number one, it must be the best song.
Some of his other choices, so he picks Chris de Burgh because he says Chris de Burgh was always there whenever Ireland were at a tournament. He was always there drinking with them like, on the night they went out. He'd be the last one in the bar. You think Chris de Burgh? Isn't Chris de Burgh famous for like 5 foot? How is he keeping up with drinking? And Jack Charlton paints the story of Chris de Burgh as this legendary drinker that could keep up with the likes of Bonner and John Aldridge all night. Like almost every tournament they went to. Another, he obviously picks Dirty Old Town by the Dubliners.
Yeah.
Like his relationship with the Irish comes across really well. He picks a song called Delirium Tremens by Christy Moore, which he picks the song and they play a bit of it, but they don't mention the fact that Jack Charlton is name-checked in the song. Like, how have you missed that? But then my favourite, the obviously, you know, Desert Island Disc culminates with Luxury Item. What does he pick? It's someone brand. When you conjure an image of
pint of Guinness,
Black Cap,
close fishing rod. Of course, it's a fishing rod.
Lovely, lovely.
It's a great listen.
At any point, does Sue Lawley ever refer to him as Jack Como?
It's really testy, actually, because Sue Lawley kind of. She does it.
Where does she go? You knew Andy Townsend wasn't actually Irish. Come on, Jack.
Sue Lawley does her research and knows enough to know that Jack Charlton has a reputation for Route 1 long ball football. And obviously she says this to him. It's very controversial, your reign, because of the accusations that you play wrong long ball football. Jack Charlton nearly kicks off in this interview. It's the feistiest desert islandist I've ever heard. Jack Charlton's like having a go at her. It sounds like he gets up from his chair and it's like shouting across the studio.
Well, that's a total ambush by her.
It's a total ambush.
I'm with Jack Charlton there.
Jack Charlton does not hold back. He goes in two-footed on Lawley.
Good on him. Good on him.
Fantastic listen. So if you've got any more 90s contemporary 90s football news doing the rounds, and, you know, Gary Lineker took in a refugee the other day, Matthew Letizia is out of work. They're just a couple of the news stories I've ignored for this particular episode. hello@quicklykevin.com.
Okay. Now, as we've said, the Patreon has launched the Quickly Kevin Fan Club. Each month, there's two bonus episodes, one an episode of our choice, one a chapter, word by word, Steve Bruce's trilogy of crime novels. Here we are joined by Ivo Graham. Here is a taste of the first one.
Hello, Ivo Graham.
They say you should never go back.
So I think what this came from was we re-listened to separately the first Striker episode, and I couldn't believe how little we'd said about it.
Yeah.
How long is it, Michael? That first episode? It's over an hour?
Episode is under an hour.
The entire episode, and that's with correspondence with top and tail, yeah.
An hour.
There's probably 40-something minutes of
this is
Striker
mad.
Chat.
Because this is it's mad. The best of the Steve Barnes books, and we just thought we didn't talk about it enough.
I remember my sort of one of my most sort of vivid memories of recording sort of all of them was of, because we were having such a lovely time and because we were all just desperate to get our favourite, just constantly going, oh no, they're just sort of losing a paragraph, which I was ready to hold up as the definitive bit of Steve Barnes writing.
So what we wanted to do is we wanted to
take a very different approach.
Yeah, and revisit all of the books and read them word for word and discuss them with the reverence and detail that they deserve.
Yeah.
And don't forget, me and Michael haven't read them in full. We've only seen it through your eyes.
And I won't have, I haven't read Striker, obviously. See, obviously. I can't speak for Ivo, but I'm going to. We haven't read Striker since 2017 when we read
it. And it's not likely you're going to pick up a copy. These go for £1,000 a pop on eBay. Mm. They're rare. So this is an opportunity, a rare opportunity, to really find out what is in these books.
Okay, so here we go. This is Striker by Steve Bruce. Br- bright red blood on the knife blade. The knife in my hand. Duffy's dead body stretched out on the locker room floor. And to cap it all, that's when Carvery opens the door. I didn't do it, I said weakly. And England didn't win the World Cup in 66.
There we go.
That's the opening.
I've gone big. It started with Mr. Brightside.
Yeah. It's an absolute thing. Also, I know I must have pointed this out last time, but the moment I said it, it was the same problem. I didn't do it. I said weekly does sound like he said it every week. And England didn't win the World Cup in 66, he sneered. Do people who are listening this know the plot of this book? Can we reference that we know who killed...
I think if you haven't listened to the original ones, what the fuck are you doing on Patreon listening to these ones?
Okay, well, the fact that the murderer is mentioned in the third sentence is absolutely astonishing.
Yeah.
At the scene of the crime, I put the knife down. Even then it occurred to me that my prints were on the handle. It was 10:30 in the morning. What started as just another Monday had suddenly turned pear-shaped. I'll give the police a bell, said Carvery. There was a crooked smile on his lips. Eddie Carvery was enjoying this. Duffy was dead. There was blood everywhere, even on my hands. Eddie Carvery was enjoying it all. Do you think that's a good repetition, or do you think that is...
As you say, I think from a plot perspective... He's given us too much. But
with the benefit of hindsight, yeah, the murderer is enjoying this situation, as you would expect a murderer to do.
This was his big chance. Me inside, on a charge of murder. Carvery as caretaker manager, a run of good results, and he gets my job, which he has always wanted and expected to get when the last guy got the old heave-ho after the boardroom takeover.
That's a Bruceism, isn't it? Yeah. The old heave-ho.
What's interesting there, though, is... Quite often you will sort of meet what turns out to be the killer in the first scene, but they'll be presented as other, so you won't be aware of their motivations or their motives. But Bruce here has literally gone, oh no, this guy wants to have my job, and now I'm being framed for a murder.
And he's enjoying it.
But I think perhaps he's hiding in plain sight. It's like, it's so obviously him that you go, well, it can't be him. It's a double, triple bluff.
What's interesting about it is a classic Bruceism.
I mean, he's not Dickens.
But, well, I did say to you two earlier that I want to write a GCSE-style paper for our fans.
Yeah.
And one of the questions would be, using examples from the text, show how Bruce moves effortlessly from a murder mystery to discussion of football.
Yes.
As quickly as possible. And I think this is a great example of that, because you've got to remember, if I found a dead body with a knife in it, that is a defining moment of my life, and I'm not worried about my job, how that's going to affect my job prospects.
Yeah.
What is he doing picking up the knife? If you saw a dead body with a knife next to it, why is your instinct to pick up the murder weapon?
Yeah, I suppose it's like a, oh God, I should check if he's all right kind of thing.
So does he pull the knife out of the body? Or is it
like Excalibur?
Yeah, it doesn't say why he's got the knife in his hand. Soon, I was surrounded by members of the club. Nothing much was said. Some of them touched me lightly on the shoulder, letting me know they were in sympathy with me. I smiled weakly.
It's very weak, isn't it?
But was unable to utter a single word, either of explanation or in my defence. What I didn't know then was that I was in deep shock. When a manager's top striker is murdered... and the manager is found with a weapon in his hand, it's no time to start singing, we're on our way to the Premiership.
Can we just say as well?
I don't remember that bit.
There isn't a single reference to the fact, what about Duffy? What about this lad who's dead? Can you resuscitate him? Is he breathing? No, it's, oh, well, he's happy this has happened. Yeah.
It's very weird. It's a very strange reaction. But I think that goes through the club. Throughout, really.
I mean, I'm no expert medically. Would a single stab wound in the back kill you?
I suppose if you got it in the right place. It depends, really. Like, I suppose if you got it in the lung, stroke, or the heart.
Yeah.
That's one thing I'm quite happy to trust Bruce.
Yeah,
on,
yeah. Okay.
That's all right. I think a murder has been completed to a satisfactory degree. Question everything else. But that's all right.
I had quite literally been caught red-handed, and the guy who found me was an implacable enemy. Implacable. I feel like I'm suddenly reading a Will Self book.
We who've made a career of scoffing at the writing of Steve Bruce, one paragraph into our deeply hubristic read-along, have not between us a confident guess at how to pronounce a word he's used.
Yeah.
You've got to say, he who laughs last.
These wings are very much made of wax, guys. I said to Ivo before this, I said, this is either the best or the worst idea we've ever had. Full refunds available, Patreon, guys.
He's made a fool of us.
He's absolutely done us.
What does implacable mean?
I don't know what implacable means.
I'm so sorry, Steve.
Can we Google it?
Plaque. How are you spelling that?
Unable to be appeased or placated.
I mean, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Steve. So stop.
I'm dreading it now.
He doesn't know that word, does he?
I think one of the recurring themes is that you can feel the copy and the paste function. when he's doing his long segments about, you know, the sort of changing face of the industrial north or whatever, it feels like it's just been lifted from a page. But that's not to say that that word isn't one he would use.
I would absolutely love to be watching Match of the Day in a few weeks and see Bruce is in a press conference and he describes Andy Carroll as implacable.
That was Ivo Graham. That was chapter one, episode one of the Steve Bruce Striker series. Chapter two will be next month. If you want to hear the full version, get yourself over to patreon.com/quicklykevin. And just to throw back to something we talked about before we listened to that little preview of the Steve Bruce episodes. You know, I mentioned that Jack Charlton picked his Desert Island Disc and had Jimmy Nail Crocodile Shoes as his choice. Mm. On the Desert Island Disc website, it says the album that song appears on. And for the Jimmy Nail Crocodile Shoes, it says available on Now 30. I didn't realize Jimmy Nail didn't even put a full album out.
No, he must have done a Crocodile Shoes album.
Now 30. Amazing.
There we go. It's been a pleasure to be back. It's always an absolute joy. We are back next week with our first proper interview episode. It is the absolutely amazing Jamie Redknapp. It's one of the best interviews we've done. I absolutely loved it. Can't wait to hear it again. If you want to get in touch.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list @quicklykevin.com.
That's it for this week. If you want a bit more Quickly Kevin content, there's a Shot at Glory reviewed over on the Quickly Kevin fan club. Just sign up at patreon.com/quicklykevin. But we'll be back next week for Jamie Redknapp. Until then, Robbie Slater.
See you later.
Go, Les! Hit Les! Hit Les over the top!